Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
All right.
Hello and welcome to the Fire Pete Golding commemorative edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, otherwise known as the 2020 Ole Miss postgame. So this is going to be the tale of two podcasts, and I'm going to give you a little listening instructions to sort of help you out here. Very different than what we've done before, but here's sort of the reality of this one. I'm going to ask that you listen to the offense breakdown first, then listen to the offense breakdown again. Listen to it a second time. Then wait until the next day before you listen to the defensive breakdown. I want to absolutely make sure that we do not sleep on this historically great offensive performance simply because we're pissed off at how historically wretched the defensive performance was. So praise be to the offense. The defense needs a little work. And so let's make sure as we're listening, however you break it down and listen to it, do what you do. But however you break it down, don't gloss over the offense. I'm not going to when we step through, but I want to make sure that as fans, we appreciate that side of the ball, that side of the field, what we saw on Saturday, because we would not be in this position, 15-point victors, were it not for the tenacity and the prosperity on the offensive side of the ball. And I want to throw this in for everyone. If you're not yet listening to or have access to the Zoom calls, then you are already missing out. We've had two such calls, about 3 hours worth of calls, live interaction. They've been just a bucket of fun. If you've been either on the Zoom calls or in the bonus group that gets the audio version of the Zoom calls, you would already know about a sponsor that's coming up. You would already know about a contest that's coming up, and you guys are going to get access to this too. It's just going to be on a different sort of time schedule. You would get to see, so this is a tease for future, the next Zoom call is this Thursday night. The Thursday night leading up to the Georgia game. And we will have the product, the sponsor product, on display and in action Thursday night. So if you're on the Zoom call, you'll have access to that. It's the All America support team that has access, live access to the Zoom calls. And then all of the other support teams have access to the recordings that we put out. And I would just tell you, it's something that all the cool kids are doing. So we recommend that you give that a shot. There is sort of a sales page sign-up sheet on the website, alabamafootballpodcast.com. We strongly encourage that you give that a look. Sort of a full breakdown of all of the content, all the bonuses, all the benefits that are a party to those levels of support, and we ask that you give that a look. And if you're interested or have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out, alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com, and I will personally answer all of those emails. So now, without further ado, let's jump into the Alabama Ole Miss post game. So Alabama hung 63 on Ole Miss, and Ole Miss hung 48 on Alabama. Let's focus on the 63 first. Let's focus on what Alabama did first, because like I said, it's a historically great performance, and let's revel in that. Let's celebrate that. Let's not ignore it because we're mad at the defense. So offensively, Alabama strung up 723 total yards of offense, a phenomenal number. 37 first downs. Now, 37 is a lot of first downs, but think about this. 37 first downs were gained offensively. There were actually a total, when you think of start of the game and kickoffs and stuff like that, there were four changes of possessions. There were 43 first down snaps. There were 21 second down snaps. That's pretty amazing. That's moving the ball. That's efficient movement of the ball, continuing to churn and cycle through first down after first down after first down without even having to progress to second down. Alabama was 6 of 7 on third downs. So hear that. 43 first down snaps, 21 second down snaps, 7 third down snaps. So again, progressing the ball, not even allowing to get it to a second down, not even allowing to get it to a third down. But Alabama, when it did go to third down, they were able to stay on the field. They converted 6 of 7, which is pretty impressive. 723 total yards. We talked about that. 417 passing, again, by a quarterback who some questioned whether he should start the season. 306 rushing yards for a rushing offense that had been sort of lamented the last few weeks of the season, last couple of weeks of the season, first 2 weeks. So that's incredible production. I know we want to say, well, it's Ole Miss. It's Ole Miss. They're historically bad on offense. That's fine. We always play lesser thans on offense. It ain't every season that we hang up 723. It's not every season that we hang up 400 yards passing. It's not every season that we hang up 300 yards rushing. So let's put this, you know, let's definitely look at this and put this in perspective. Let's talk about Mac Jones. 28 of 32 passing. That's better than 87% passing. I think if you took a father and son and you threw them in the backyard to have a toss, they may not complete 87% of their passes. So to do that against a live defense is pretty darn impressive. Mac had 2 touchdowns. And if you look at his stat lines through 3 games so far to start the season, he's on a dramatically better trajectory, better path than Joe Burrow was last year in his statistically historical season. Trying to mix words there, in his historical season last year, he was not on the pace that Mac Jones is currently. And of course, this is an all SEC schedule as opposed to what the last season started with. So let's appreciate Mac Jones. We've talked about Mac Jones. I talked to him. I referenced him last season as sort of the senator. He was going around talking to players, pumping up the team, and just being a voice of encouragement. And we've already seen that so far this season. He is a leader, capital letters, a leader. If he were to quit football and start a business, I'd want to go work for it. If he were to run for office, I'd want to move to his district so I could vote for him. Mac Jones is a leader. We see players rally around him, and we see him sort of personify those characteristics. The offense was historically good. The defense historically bad. And Mac Jones talks about needing to work on the things that he missed. Well, he missed 4 passes, right? There's not a lot there to work on. But he stepped up and took a degree of ownership and said, you know, there's things that I need to work on. There's things that I can do to improve the efficiency of the offense. Folks, that's being a leader. That's deflecting. That's detracting from, not in a negative way, but deflecting the negative attention from sort of the elephant in the room. And he's wanting, you know, shine that light on me. I can take it. I can handle it. The leadership characteristics there, I think, are phenomenal. Najee Harris is another guy that really stepped up at a position where Alabama needed him in the running game. 23 carries for 206 yards, a 9-yard average, just phenomenal. He had 5 touchdowns, and he had a long touchdown of 39 yards. And it was that last touchdown. For all the production that he gave, it was that last production, that last touchdown that allowed us to all exhale. I think very violently, I exhaled when he scored that touchdown. My TV may have a complex today after watching that game. His 5 touchdowns, that's only happened twice in Alabama history. Sean Alexander rushed for 5 touchdowns against BYU in 98. I was at that game. That was sort of a reopening of Bryant-Denny Stadium coming after some expansion. And then Santonio Beard, ironically, against Ole Miss, he rushed for 5 touchdowns in a game in 2002. And Santonio Beard may be one of the best running backs that sort of unheralded, sort of lost in history. If he had played in a different era, I think he'd be a name that that we all knew. And he played in Nashville, so, and I'm from Nashville, so I'd heard of him sort of ahead of time. And so he's always sort of been something of a favorite. But nonetheless, Najee sort of marked his name on that list, rushing for the 5 touchdowns. What's interesting is Najee was credited with a fumble, and in fairness, so we're going to talk about that. And that was a critical fumble. Alabama was going in to score to take the lead, and the ball was really just stripped away from him. It wasn't so much a fumble. You think of a fumble, you're getting knocked, and the ball is knocked out of your arms, that you lose control of the ball as the result of a hit. He was stacked up at the line of scrimmage or at the goal line. And in the replay, you could tell that one of his arms was being held down, held to his body, and he couldn't get it up to support the ball. So he was holding the ball with one arm. And you could tell he had a firm grasp on the ball. It wasn't a fluke, but a defender was coming and fighting and physically trying to wrest the ball away from him. And a slow whistle, the defender had time to take the ball away. And so, not sour grapes at all, but I question whether that should have been a fumble. Fumble's a harsh word for it, as it was sort of stolen from his possession. And I question whether or not that even should have been allowed. Nonetheless, not trying to play sour grape there, but something that happened and is worth commenting on. But take that aside, right? Credit the fumble, if you will. And Najee still 23 for 206, average of 9 for 5 touchdowns. And the long of 39, again, wasn't the last play of the game, but it was the last play of the game, sort of merit, of note, of necessity. And Alabama fans, I think we were ecstatic and sort of exhaled when that happened. Brian Robinson, he came in, had a phenomenal day as well. 10 carries for 76 yards, so he averaged 7.6. He had a touchdown, and he looked physical. He looked incredibly aggressive. I think if he could have had another 10 carries, I think he would have put up another 100 yards. He had just a phenomenal day. Didn't get to see Trey Sanders. I had predicted in sort of the Zoom that he would have that he was going to break out. He was my prediction as a breakout player. The way the game unfolded, that didn't happen. I have to wonder if this game would have played out a little bit differently, if Najee would have held on to the ball, if we would have scored that touchdown, gone up at that point, and then kind of back and forth with us in the lead, if we wouldn't have pulled away a little bit earlier. And then that would not have allowed B-Rob a few more carries, and then Trey as well. So sort of an alternative universe there where maybe that goes a different way. But there's quite a number of alternative universes where the entire game goes the other way. So I'll rest satisfied with what we experienced sort of in our world. From a receiver standpoint, Devonta is just a rebel killer, or a land shark killer, or a bear killer. I don't know, however you sort of want to call Ole Miss, but he whips them up pretty good. He had 13 catches for 164. He didn't quite hit his 274 from last year, but you know, who's going to do that, right? So 13 carries, 164 is quite impressive. He had a nice touchdown on a run, and I'm going to sound a little bit contradictory. I don't like Devonta running the end arounds. I really don't like it. There was something about this one. Obviously, it was critical time in the game, but I think it really fooled the defense, and he really just waltzed in. And so it's not a play. It's a play I never would have called, but then I wouldn't have gotten that touchdown. And he was so graceful, sort of running around and scoring that touchdown. So that was nice. And again, all of the scores, all of the touchdowns were critical. They were necessary. They were important. And certainly the one by Devonta there was as well. Waddle had 6 carries for a buck 20. So he did not get into the end zone Saturday, but he did set up his third in a three-game season so far, his third 100-yard performance. So that was outstanding. Mechie had 4 for 75. I think he did have a drop, and I think there was maybe an overthrow that went in his direction. But Mechie did have 4 for 75, which is very steady, impressive performance. Forrestall had two catches, and so that's his first two-catch day in a while, and he had a touchdown as well. So he looked impressive in his play. Najee actually had three catches for 42, so he padded his stats in that regard. So he was up near 250 overall. So Najee, just an incredible day. The line allowed one sack on the day, and that's something Mac said. He was praising, again, just leadership. He was praising the offensive line and made the comment that, I don't even think I got hit today. I think a quarterback probably remembers getting sacked, but maybe not. We'll give a little bit of credit. But all that Mac wanted to do was just praise those around him and then point out that he had some things to work on. Again, top-notch leadership that we're seeing from Mac Jones there. That you know, the kid's going to go places, and he's going to take the team with him, I believe, this year. So quite impressive. The line had a couple of misses, and the one that stood out to me is Alex Leatherwood. I guess you have to say he missed, but I don't think he did. And I love sort of the piss and vinegar he had. He knew that he was supposed to get help. And what's interesting, that play, he actually, you know, lined up. There was a tight end. You know, he's a left tackle, so there's a tight end outside of him. The tight end moved, and so he's lined up next to Deontay at the guard. And so what's interesting is Alex stepped forward, and with his right arm, he sort of hand shoved the man that Deontay was blocking. And he did that real quick. And then he jumped back in sort of in a pass pattern, in a sort of pass blocking, stepping back to pick up his man. And the action of doing, you know, one and then stepping back, you know, he's almost, but he's not quite Superman. And so the guy, the defender on his outside was able to get around, but he was so incensed, Alex was. And if you go back and look at it, it did appear that the tight end was supposed to have helped. Maybe it's chipped, you know, maybe it's block, and then Alex is going to come and block him as well. But Alex was so mad. He didn't throw his helmet, but boy, he looked like he was that close to it, that it just seems like he knew that was going to land on his grade, and that it should not, and that he felt that he was sort of hung out to dry there. And so I kind of like the piss and vinegar that he had there. Again, the offensive performance, can't say enough things about the offense, and we should just revel in the offensive side of the production. Again, 63 points. What's interesting, if you look at the sort of the breakdown, the scoring breakdown, Alabama scored 21 points in the first half, and then proceeded to score 21 points in each of the third and fourth quarters. So that was pretty impressive. The offensive explosion really happened in the second half. Both teams were tied at 21 at the half. So Alabama scored, 42 in the second half. And then, 27? Am I doing my math right in my head? 27 that Ole Miss scored in the second half. So a lot of offensive production there in the second half. What I want to talk about also, and this might be the most critical thing. It's one thing to look at stats and put up numbers, to think about offense in those terms. Another thing to think about in this game in particular is the pressure that the Alabama offense faced. So in this game, and you can say Ole Miss was not a stout defense. That's fine. We've had enough procedural penalties that were not impacted necessarily by the quality of the defense, right? So here's what I would say. The Alabama offense was in a position where it was very clear they would have to score every possession. Every time they possessed the ball, they were going to have to score. And not only score, they were going to have to put up touchdowns. That is a lot of pressure. You think about the pass play coming in, and so the pressure that puts on the quarterback to know that he's got to locate the ball perfectly, that the receiver has to run the route just perfectly, just to leap at the right time to get the ball. The offensive linemen have to minimize their penalties. They can't get beat at the line of scrimmage because it's going to disrupt a possession that needs to end. It may not be a perfect possession, but it needs to result in a touchdown. And so it needs to end in perfection. The wholeness of it needs to be perfect. And so any sort of miscue can throw that out of balance. And we saw that with Ole Miss with a couple of botched snaps that they have. Alabama almost, in fact, Alabama did have a botched snap, but they were able to recover. Ole Miss, under the same pressure, although they were playing with house money, under the same pressure, they caved. Alabama not playing with house money. They were 24-point favorites. Would have been more of a laughing stock if they lost, as opposed to Ole Miss as a moral victory in their loss. So the Alabama offense playing with significantly greater pressure. They produced time after time after time. They scored touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. 21 in the third quarter, 21 in the fourth quarter, six straight possessions. Alabama scored touchdowns in the second half. And in fact, at least the last possession in the first half, Alabama controlled the ball and they scored a touchdown there. I'd have to go back and look, you know, prior to that, did they score additionals? I actually think they did. I think it was eight in a row, but definitely six, definitely seven. And what's interesting, and we talk about this in the podcast as well, when you have the last possession of the half and then the first possession of the next half, that's sort of a magical opportunity to sort of flip the game in your favor. Alabama scored 14 points in those possessions. So you think about a 15-point margin, those two possessions yielded 14. I'd say that's right there at that level of significance, that sort of magical mark that we talk about having those two possessions back-to-back in scoring. So again, I almost just want to take a moment and celebrate, you know, the offense, and hopefully I've done it a little bit of justice in stepping this through. And again, I can't, you know, an A triple plus for the performance, and in context, the performance under the pressure that they were on, cannot say enough good things about that. Many game balls for the offense. I'm going to go maybe a little bit sentimental here, but I was really pleased with Joshua McMillan coming in as a fullback. I think he was in at fullback for the third time before the announcers caught on to it, before the announcers said anything. And of course, on that block, on that play, he had a really big block. And so they felt really good about sort of calling it out. But that was really the third possession that that he had been in. At least, I'll say that, at least the third possession that number 40 had been in at a fullback position. So that was really good to see. And I'm going to do sort of a Tommy tribute. I'm going to sort of break the mini game ball up a little bit, and I'm going to give two on offense. And so Joshua McMillan certainly gets one. And another player, and I've sort of gotten raked over the coals for mispronouncing his name or sort of botching his name, Kendall Randolph. I want to give him props. He has lined up at the tight end position, so he's dual numbered every game so far this season. And he did a disproportionately higher number of snaps at the tight end position against Ole Miss. So he has seen regular action. He's a name that you're probably not going to hear, but he has seen regular action at the tight end position, literally an extra lineman renumbering and lining up at the tight end slot. If we continue to do that, I hope we give him a pass at some point, because no one will see that coming. I don't know if he's got the mitts for it, but you just root for the big lineman playing tight end. You hope he gets an opportunity. All right. So yay, Alabama offense, right? All right. Got to take a drink for this one, because we're going to flip the field and we're going to talk about the Alabama defense. And we're going to start off by saying historically bad. We've already said that. We're going to say it again. We're going to try to be honest, and we're going to try not to pile on any one single individual. And so we're going to try to go sort of, you know, mostly just the facts here, ma'am. But we're going to douse in some good opinion, I think, here as well. So let's look at the numbers. Historically bad, the Alabama defense allowed 647 yards. I've probably read a couple of times today how poorly that rate sort of numerically, historically. It doesn't matter. It sucks. Certainly the worst that we've seen under Saban. So, you know, historically bad. We don't need to 1, 2, 3. Is it the 8, top 6? It doesn't matter. It's you know, shit in the sack is what we saw on defense. Alabama allowed 379 passing yards, 268 rushing yards, 31 first downs were allowed, and Ole Miss converted 4 of 4 on their fourth down conversions, which that's a big number. That also, the 4-of-4 on fourth down, those are 4 third down conversions that didn't convert. So if you look at their third down conversions, you might say, well, that's not so bad. Yeah, but 4 of them, they converted on fourth downs. So factor that into the math, right? Nonetheless, really, really bad numbers there. There are multiple contributing factors. I won't go so far as to call them reasons, and I certainly would not pin the entirety of this on any one of these reasons. I don't know that I would pin the entirety of it on all of these reasons. So what I'm asking you to do is hear what I'm saying, not what I'm not saying. I am not saying that one or more of these were the reason for the defense struggling. I'm saying that all of these played a role, but none of them should have, and even aggregately, they should not have. They don't have a negative sum that equals what was allowed, right? So hear what I'm saying, not what I'm not saying. The weather did play a factor. The wet field did play a factor for defense. Ole Miss playing with house money in this game played a factor. This was Lane Kiffin's Ole Miss's Super Bowl against Alabama. That played a factor. I think there's system saturation with Nick Saban's defense in the SEC. There's 4 or 5 coaches in the SEC that run versions of the same thing. 8 years ago, that wasn't so. And so his system was more unique and not something that teams had to prepare for every week. Teams see it now. It is a new era of ball. And you could reason that some components of the Saban era or of the Saban system are bygone. And in the new offensive structure, maybe they're not as valid. And I think there's some legitimacy to that. Again, not blaming this game on that fact. I'm just saying these factors exist. I think they're all true. I think the team was thinking versus reacting. You could call that, blame that on the system. You know, Ole Miss playing with house money, they ran a lot of things out of pattern. And I think Saban talked about this. Some of the third and longs where they ran, who does that? Well, you might occasionally see that to keep somebody napping. Ole Miss seemed to do that time and time again. Again, that's not the standalone reason. None of these are. Was the Alabama team looking ahead a little bit? Yeah, maybe. Georgia's a big game next week, and this is the Ole Miss team that we're supposed to rough up pretty good. You know, poor coaching and certainly poor execution by the players. Plenty of missed tackles. So I think all of that sort of, you know, congeal into, you know, some form of witch's brew of factors and impacts. Again, I don't think that all of those together equal the performance, the negative performance that we saw on the field. But I do think they all play a role. And actually, I want to tip my cap to Lane Kiffin and just an outstanding performance. Our defense struggled. The Alabama defense struggled, but holy wow. The Ole Miss offense was outstanding. They were lights out. They were outmatched, but you wouldn't have known it. And certainly even the final score and a competitive game until late in the fourth quarter, you wouldn't have known it. They kept showing the offensive coordinator, Jeff Lebby, in sort of the press box, and he just looked like the coolest cat, the coolest customer going. You would never have guessed, if you just watched a little bit of footage of him, you never would have guessed that he was calling the offense in this ball game. You know, you would have thought, why do they keep showing this guy who's playing, you know, online battleship with his subson? That's really what it looked like. He just, you know, was cool as a cucumber. And so now let's talk about the defense. What are some of the things that are wrong with the defense? What maybe can be done to sort of correct this? And some of these are sort of maybe predictions, maybe thoughts. What can we do to fix this? I'm not going to go through and list through a whole bunch of players that had, hey, somebody had a lot of tackles. You know, I think I saw where Dylan Moses had, you know, double digit tackles. I don't know when it happened because I didn't see him have a big play. And that's not to say those tackles weren't important. Every time we stopped them was important. But I didn't see anyone really stand up and have just a kick-ass whiz-bang play. DJ Dell had a sack, I think, that was good. Philarian Mathis, Barmore, they had a couple of plays. But there wasn't any wow factor on the Alabama defense like there was against Missouri. I think we were all super excited because they just looked electric. The defense did. Some of the players flying around. We didn't see any of that against Ole Miss. And so Again, I think the talent's there. I think some of the coaching there is there. I think there are a number of factors that contributed, but they just threw out a dud, the Alabama defense did on Saturday. And for the factors we've named and just for the fact that Ole Miss came out and gave us everything they got, and they probably played above themselves. They had a Steven Garcia game, let's say that. And some shit like that you just can't quantify. So instead of sort of list a bunch of players had 8 or 9 tackles because, you know, woohoo, we're gonna talk defense a little bit different. And we're gonna talk about what would we do to change? What could we do to change things up? I don't know if these necessarily sort of register as predictions, but they're ideas, they're concepts that I think that should be given some credence and should be maybe given some run. Certainly in practice. So what I saw, and Saturday Zoom call, a couple of guys brought this up as well. So credit there as well. But the paying particular attention to it against Ole Miss, the outside linebackers couldn't set the edge. Christopher Allen, not to pick on anyone necessarily, but we struggled with Will Anderson as well. We brought in Drew Sanders at one point. We were trying to find a defensive end, or it's not even a defensive end. It's an outside linebacker, and that might even be part of the problem. But Christopher Allen reminded me of Chavis Williams in the Cam Newton game. He couldn't set the edge. We need to go get – they don't make these anymore, and so there's going to be an age demographic that they won't know what this is. But we need to go get one of those big, you know, 12 feet tall, you know, three foot by 3 foot phone booths. And we just need to roll that out as the outside linebacker and just plop it out there and say, damn it, we've set the edge. But we need something that can, you know, literally – set the edge and force the defense back in. I think there's a couple things we can do. I would put, we run, you know, a 4-2-5, right? And so it's primarily, sometimes, you know, when it's a 4-2-5, the true nickel, then it might be two defensive linemen with two outside linebackers. Sometimes it might be three defensive linemen with an outside linebacker and then two linebackers and five defensive backs. Well, let's check out who we're putting on that edge. I like Will Anderson. I want him to continue to play there, but maybe we need to rotate him out in particular situations. Maybe same with Chris Allen, that he plays less reps. What if we were to do something with LeBryan Ray, and instead of an outside linebacker walking up, what if we were to try to play a true defensive end? LeBryan Ray could do that. You know, maybe we look at that. Maybe Joshua McMillan, who's stout in his own right, what's he go, 6'4", 240? Maybe he could set the edge. And there would be a limited responsibility set, but, you know, set the edge. Keep everything, you know, contain everything to the inside. I think he's a trusted 6-year senior that you could put him out there and trust him with that instruction, that he wouldn't get sort of sucked into the interior. I don't think he gets swallowed up as easily by an offensive lineman as it appeared that Chris Allen did. So there's a couple things that I would consider. I probably like the little Brian Ray idea a little bit more, but you know, maybe you put them both out there. Maybe they become part of the rotation, so you can keep the offensive line guessing in terms of Alabama doing something a little bit different. But we've got to set the edge. We've got to contain. That makes things easier for the entirety of the defense. Daniel Wright. I don't want to pick on the guy too much, but I think the responsibility may be too large for him. I hate to say that because his athleticism is on point. I just think he's got to rein in and play within himself. He continues to try to go for the big play. He went for sort of batting the ball down against the tight end rather than clobbering the tight end after he caught it. And what that did is he missed, so he allowed a clean catch to the tight end. And in missing, he knocked Dylan Moses out of the play, and then tight end was able to run for a long gain. That may have even gone for a touchdown. This is special teams, but in the punt coverage, Daniel Wright was in position to knock the ball out of bounds at, you know, the 1-foot line, and just clumsily batted the ball into the end zone. And this is 2 weeks in a row where it's been just a little bit of a lazy, clumsy sort of event that worked negatively against Alabama. You could say the Aeneas Williams play last week when he should have knocked the heck out of a lot of the guy out of bounds rather than just bump him, expecting this athlete to go out of bounds that had the flexibility and the balance to stay in bounds. And so I wonder if Daniel Wright's not trying to make the big play, and in doing so, he's making poor plays. I don't know if the moment's too big for him. I don't know. I will say this. This is a true statement. We are missing Ronald Williams, who's out with a broken arm. And he was injured late in camp and was injured at a point where it looked like he was already out of competition for one of the corner positions, already out of competition for a free safety position. So, me included, I thought, well, we have a lot of talent. We have a lot of depth. If someone's going to get hurt, and invariably someone is going to get hurt, then, and I'm not rooting for any individual to get hurt, but let it be a backup, right? And I think that's not unreasonable. I don't think that's cruel. I don't think that's me headhunting an individual player. I just think, you know, backup versus starter, what are you going to do? But what I think we're seeing is that Ronald Williams would be in the rotation. Rotation at a corner position, rotation at the free safety. He would be playing right now. I'm pretty confident of that. When you look at, you know, Daniel Wright and you rotate him out, who do you put in? Well, you put in Helms, but then what do you do when you go to a dime? Well, you got to put, you know, Wright back in. Or maybe you play Branch, and so it's another true freshman. And so when you look at the sixth and seventh, you know, DBs, is Ronald Williams a fifth, sixth, or seventh defensive back? Well, yes, he is. And so what we end up doing is getting even further down sort of the food chain there. And so I think we are missing Ronald Williams. And I'll say this, right? I've not seen that published or printed or speculated anywhere. I think that's sort of a unique perspective that you're going to get for us. Pat myself on the back, if you will. But I think that's real. I think there's something real to that. And I think if this continues, you know, maybe coming up with Georgia and Jordan Battle can't play, maybe you start to see some of the speculation. Certainly coming out of that game, I think you see it. But nonetheless, I think we're missing Ronald Williams. I do think, though, I would still attempt to mix it up. I don't know that you could do this every week against every team, but against Ole Miss, you could. I would have looked at moving Patrick Surtain into the star, and then maybe Kai could play a free safety, or he could play a dime back. And so it's not, hear what I'm saying, not what I'm not saying. If you take PS2, move him at the star, bring in Jalen Amar Davis at corner, you lose a little bit at corner, but they're not attacking the corner. And so you watch that really close. If he moves in, do they start attacking the corner? All right, let's watch that. But what you do is you put PS2 closer to the action. He is one of the better defenders on the Alabama defense. When he's out at corner and they're not attacking the corner, he effectively is diminished. The value that he brings to the defense is lessened. And so if you can rotate him into the star, you bring him closer into the action, closer into sort of the play calling, the defensive alignment, so to speak. He can contribute in ways that he can't when he's out at corner running nines for a receiver that they're not going to throw to. This is not me mad at Kai, because I think Kai is playing very, very well. He's a freshman that is demonstrating that he has a substantial proof future in the Alabama secondary. So it's not moving PS2 to star to replace Kai, but it's shuffling the deck to arrange the talent. And so you're basically trading out Jalen Amar Davis for Daniel Wright. That's the net of it, because Jalen Amar Davis plays corner, PS2 comes to star, and Kai moves to the free safety and then potentially even the dime, you know, with Helms. And so, again, you make sure you got sort of who's practiced at what positions. But I think that's something that I would have looked at. I would have looked at a series. If you're already sort of, well, they're going to score again, then try something different. Mix it up a little bit. And I definitely would have looked at that. I don't know why the coaches did. I'm not hearing anything sort of asked about that. Maybe as we get further into week, we'll hear some questions on that. But I think that's definitely something that I would have looked at against Ole Miss, and I would look at it in future games as well. Again, hamstrung a little bit by Ronald Williams. And I bet if an enterprising reporter is to ask that question to Saban, he'll comment on Ronald Williams. That would be a prediction. That'd be a prediction there. Christian Harris and Will Anderson, I love these guys. They are super athletic. They are motoring all over the field. If there's one thing, if they could dial back like half a tick so that they were operating a little bit more under control. I'm not asking them to take the edge off. I'm not asking them to not play with an abandon. I'm just saying with a little bit less reckless. They were close on so many plays and just essentially ran themselves out of the play. And if they had approached the play with just a little bit more control, not a whole lot, an almost unnoticeable amount would have had a significant contribution on the game. Go back and watch the plays that Will Anderson and Christian Harris almost made. And look in the context of this game, it doesn't take very many of those to make a big difference. Five or six, seven maybe, of those plays where they almost made a play. Had they made the play, that's getting Ole Miss off the field on third down, right? And you do that one, two, three times. Those are possessions. Those potentially are possessions. So three plays could be two possessions. That could be 14 points off the field, off the total. So again, just a little bit more under control. That's something that I would definitely want to talk to them about, definitely want to coach them up about. And I'm going to say this about the defense. There's no alpha. There's no one that pounds his chest and say, dogs, we're hunting, and I want to say more profanity than that, but there's no one that sort of lines up and says, dudes, let's go get this done. You know, I think of a Ryan Anderson used to be that guy. He just looked like he played angry, and you just get him sort of in a defensive huddle that he was going to be right and he was going to get everyone else right. I like to talk about Ray Lewis and sort of pissed off for greatness because that's hilarious and it's perfect. And I think even at the time I was like, I don't understand what that is supposed to mean. I understand it now, right? I understand it certainly better now. And we need somebody that can take charge. I don't know that it's Dylan Moses. I haven't seen it yet from Dylan. And then I don't know who else it is, because I think there's some youngsters that don't want to speak up ahead of Dylan Moses because it's freaking Dylan Moses. But we need that. We need that piss and vinegar. We need that alpha on the defensive side. We need to find out who that is and make sure that they get the reps and make sure that they are given license to speak up. I don't know. How do I want to say this? There are not all defensive coordinators are assholes, but some of the good ones are. And so I don't think Pete Golding's an asshole. Sorry if that's a little blue, but I think, and I like Golden, but I'm seeing maybe what some of the other, I'm seeing what others have been saying. And so I'm glad no one took me up on my bet. We don't have a defensive coordinator that's just angry because that's almost a requirement of the position. I will say this though. This is not an overnight fix. However, that doesn't mean all hope is lost for the season. So what we're going to start to see, and this is where I think this is what we do best. We watch for shit like this and we watch for sort of what's happening. And so let's watch the subtle position changes. What happens sort of subtly within the position groups? Let's watch that. Let's watch subtly some of the play calling. Does it simplify? Does it all run through Pete? Let's watch that. Remember, it was 2 years ago when Tosh Lapua was the defensive coordinator. And then about midseason, he was kind of the defensive coordinator in name only because Pete started calling some of the defenses. It's a little bit trickier because Tosh and Pete were both on the field coaches. But what about Charlie Strong? I know a lot of people are saying, fire Pete Golding and put in Charlie Strong. I don't think it's that easy. And I don't think Saban's going to do something so outwardly dramatic. Not yet. It may happen. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. But I think it's a little more subtle.
I do think that Pete, at this point, and I wouldn't have said this before Saturday, Pete is absolutely coaching for his job. At best, let me say that differently. At best, he's coaching for his job, because it could be that Saban's already made up his mind. Saban made up his mind on Tosh before anyone knew it. They may have known it. And when he subtly started to shift some of the responsibilities. Like I said, the big difference there is they were both on field coaching coaches. And so you could say you guys help each other out a little bit. Meanwhile, coach knows this is a transition. I just haven't told them yet. Well, it could be that Charlie play a stronger role in the game planning of the defense. You're still not on the field, but we need you to step up and help, you know, Pete out here a little bit. It may be subtle, but we need to watch for those kinds of things. But like I said, Pete at best is coaching for his job, unless Saban has already made up his mind that it's done. And we just, at the end of the season, it's done. So that'll be interesting to see. Are there any sort of hints or any sort of giveaways that we see over the balance of the season? I don't know. So those are definitely some things to look for on defense. Again, historically bad. None of this is excuse making. Not a damn lick of it. We're just trying to sort of sift through the ashes and see what we have here. There are some reasons. There are some excuses. The signals, catching up the signals. I do want to talk about that. I think it's being blown way out of proportion. I'm going to say this. You have heard Tommy and I talk about on the podcast. This is a smaller scale and sort of a jokey sort of representation. But we've all done this in our own lives. We can all identify with this. Tommy and I have been on the show before, and we're gonna talk about questions, or we're going to talk about a mini game ball player. And we'll kid. I do it more with him because he goes first, but we'll kind of do it both ways. And it's like, dude, are you reading over my shoulder? Or dude, are you reading my mail? You picked the same guy that I did. How is that possible? And it's because we're thinking about, you know, the same things, and we watch the same game and whatnot. But sort of the commentary there is, are you reading my mail? Because it's, you know, diabolical that you're saying exactly what I was going to say. Well, I think Saban in the press conference was he was trying to articulate that thought. It was as if they had our calls, because gee whiz, every time we lined up to do something, they were in the perfect formation for it. Did he really intend that to be an accusation? I don't think so. I think it was just like, holy shit, how can they get this perfect right? This is Tecmo Bowl where they call my play every time. The computer's cheating on me. That, you know, how many of us of a certain age haven't said that? And so I think that was ripped way out of proportion. And then it really set up Lane Kiffin for the best line. It says, well, if we're running plays every 10 seconds, we don't have time to read and decipher and sort of adjust based on their keys. And I think that's a little overstatement on his part, but it really cast him as sort of the winner of a non-existing argument. And I sort of just annoyed that became a story. And no one's sort of writing that angle of it, of, you know, can we get our head straight on what this really was? Because it's not, I don't think it was an accusation. And then if you're a player, I know Dylan said something about it too. If you're a player, it may really actually feel like that. And I'm not on the field, so I'm not hearing what the other team is saying. I just, my first sort of out of hand thought is, that's just a bullshit comment for a bullshit situation. And so it's not even worth sort of making it a headline, but you know, 13 sites did. So there you go. All right. So defense, like I said, historically bad. I am going to go a mini game ball. And you know what? This is absolutely the spirit of the mini game ball in a game where this is the spirit of a defensive mini game ball in a game where the defense was historically bad. So this is the absolute perfect. You could call mini game balls for the next 3 weeks and you could not name a mini game ball as perfect as the one I've got. Unless this is who you were picked to. And it's Fildarian Mathis in his air quote injury. He saves, you know, the fact that he instantly the Ole Miss crowd was booing him. And so it calls sort of an injury timeout. He had to step out. We rotate defensive linemen, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But it forced or allowed the defense to sort of regain their composure, sort of catch a breath, right? And so I, you know, mini game ball to Fildarian Mathis for doing that. I don't know why, and I saw someone speculate. I don't know why Saban saves timeouts. There are situations where the defense is gassed and you just call a timeout so they can suck some air. He saves timeouts like they're 401k eligible or something. I just don't understand it. And he's always done that. Both quarters, I could see, save him because you don't know what's going to happen in the fourth, but he'll go in the halftime with a pocket load of timeouts. And gosh, we really could have used him there, but I don't know. That's sort of an interesting sort of Saban observation there. So Philadelphia Mathis mini game ball defense, special teams. I'm going to whisper this because I don't want 2020 to hear us, but Will Reichert was 9 of 9 on PATs. And if you think about the woes that Alabama's had the last too many years in the kicking game, we have doinked plenty of PATs. In a game like this where it was score for score for score for score, a doink, a missed PAT, only a point, but it would have been a differential. It would have maintained a differential. It would have created not a tie game with each score, but still a point differential. And that can become big. Mentally, that can weigh, because then the defense needs an extra stop so the offense can get an extra score. And you know that needs to happen anyways, but when it's point for point for point for point, the pressure isn't there in the same way of it, the point not being there. And so the 9 PATs, big deal, really big deal. Sam Johnson only had one punt, which is good, and it went for 40. So we'll take that. That was certainly good. I think the comical stat probably on the season is that Carl Tucker has the longest kickoff return on the season. And it's really a podcast special, because the next closest, I think Devonta maybe is the next closest. Well, Devonta picked a ball up at the 5 that he could have fair caught and brought it out to the 25. I think he ran it to the 26. And so he gets all of those return yards. And I think his was 23 and Carl's was 26 or something like that, whatever it was. But Carl caught, Carl picked it up on sort of a squib kick. And his yards were actually in the meat of the field. They were legit. I think it was 26 or 27 yards. He had a legit 26 yards because it's out of the middle of the field. It's not these end zone to the 25 yards, which they're going to give you anyways. So his were hard-earned yards. If you were cashing it in, his yards are worth more than other kick return yards that we've had on the season. So I'm going to look for every opportunity to sort of turn that screw. And so Carl Tucker gave me sort of a funny opportunity to do that. On special teams, we don't give mini game balls on special teams, but for the hell of it, we are today. Ben Davis and John Metchie for onside kick recoveries. Ben Davis went in there and grabbed one. Questionable whether that would have been considered 10 yards. There were a couple angles that could have gone either way. But it doesn't matter when Ben Davis recovers the ball. And then John Metchie, hands like butter, he goes and just scoops up that ball. And he's like, the hell with the 10 yards. I don't need it to go 10 yards before I can touch it. I'm just going to go grab it. And the fact that he did with that confidence and that grace and the way that he just scooped up that ball, those are very big plays. You think onside kicks are not going to convert that often anyways. Had they converted, had either of them converted, that could have been ball game. So special hats off to those gents on special teams. We talked about Daniel Wright, special teams a minute ago, so we're not going to mention that again. Let's transition to next up. So Georgia comes to town, and there's a lot of angst. Man, we're playing Georgia after we look so bad against Ole Miss. What's Georgia going to do to us? There's a lot of Alabama fans selling stock, and I just don't understand that. I think comparing Georgia and Ole Miss is comparing apples and auto parts. They're not the same thing. Georgia is a better team than Ole Miss. I don't want to argue with you on that. Their talent up and down the roster is better than Ole Miss. But their offense can't hold a candle to Ole Miss. I really do believe that. And so all of the yards, people are acting like I've seen on – I'll call this chat room. I've seen people in chat rooms, the way their attitude and sort of their spirit about this game is if to suggest that if Ole Miss scored 48, and Georgia's a better team. Georgia's going to score 70. If Ole Miss had 647 yards and Georgia's a better team, well, Georgia might get 1,000 yards against us. What are we, you know, what are we ever going to do? Chicken Little, the sky's falling. And that's just the wrong, way to look at it. Thurston Howell is no Matt Carroll. It's just not true. They are just not that prolific on offense. And I like their offensive coach, but he ain't no Lane Kiffin. So I don't think they're a tougher opponent. They're more physical. Their offensive line is not outstanding, but it's better than Ole Miss's. And their defensive front, they may well be the best defense in the conference. I'll go so far as to say that. But it's not. But you can't say Ole Miss did this, so Georgia, by extension, is going to do better than that. I don't think that's true. I don't think it works that way. And I don't think that the offensive attacks, how they're going to approach the game, what Ole Miss did, Georgia's going to have a different approach. Georgia does not have the offensive weapons to do what Ole Miss did. They don't. So they have a stout D. I do think they're a little suspect in the secondary. I think that Alabama can make some hay there. This is going to be an old school SEC game. This is going to be a bloody nose game. It's going to be physical. It's going to be tight. It's going to be tight, not in a way that Ole Miss was, where it's a shootout and everyone's scoring touchdowns. It's going to be a tight game where we're exchanging punts and, you know, we're going to look for a block punt or, you know, hey, Kirby, a fake punt that potentially is going to make the difference in the game. This is a game that I want to say is a 24-17 style game. I almost need to run the 2020 offensive sort of conversion table and sort of make this a 24-27 or 34-27 style game. I think it's probably within a score, but and I could easily see Georgia winning this. Okay, I really, really could. I do think Alabama edges. I think it's tight. I think it's within a score. I hope it's not a field goal game, but I do think Alabama ekes out a close game. And I think the nature of Georgia's attack makes the defense look better. Just that alone. That doesn't mean all, you know, the defense was not as bad as we saw Saturday, and it may not be as good as we see this Saturday. There's still issues on the defense, but the nature of this attack will make the defense look better. And I do think Alabama does pull the game out. So with that, let's transition. I've got sort of three sort of talking points here at the end. I'm going to ask, I promoted this at the beginning. I'm going to promote it here at the end. Join the support team, really. Give it a shot. Support the podcast. Throw us a few bucks to keep the lights on over here. If you enjoy what we do, if you're a fan and you enjoy what we do, then we think it's well worth it. We've already done, I think last year, the 2019 team, I think we did 29 or 30 bonus shows. We are already at 15, and we're on week 3. So we're doing Zoom calls, which are just phenomenal. A lot of fun there. We're doing several bonus shows that are only released to that group. We're doing interviews with opposing sort of podcasts with opponents. We've done 3 of those. I do a quick hit sort of summary. And so I did Saturday night, Sunday morning. I did one of those for each of the games. And so we put that out there. So there's all kinds of sort of additional bonus content that you get, you know, even in addition to sort of the regular shows. If you were part of the bonus teams, you would have already sort of gotten a tease on an upcoming contest so that you could be a little bit sort of head start on preparing for that. Not that that's going to make a difference, but nonetheless, you would also get to, you'd know that you're on the sort of the Zoom call or listen to the Zoom call. You would know who our upcoming new sponsor is, and you'd be able to go check that out. And this Thursday Zoom call, we're going to demonstrate the product in action. And so you'll want to be on Thursday Zoom call because it's just a barrel of monkeys anyways. But we'll be featuring this product on the Zoom call. And as soon as we sort of get the final sort of deals sort of ironed out on that, we're going to share it with everyone. We're not holding back. But sort of the early access, right, is the deal there. If you don't want to do that, hey, I respect that. That's not a problem. Hit us up on iTunes and give us a 5-star review if you haven't done that already. The last review that we have on iTunes is a phenomenal review. It's a 5-star review. It's phenomenal. I love it. I appreciate it. Thank you, Bill. But it's a year old, and so I'd like to see some more current reviews of the 5-star variety, if possible. And I think that'll demonstrate to folks that are checking us out that we're a little more current, that you know, we haven't gone anywhere. We're still producing good stuff and people still like it. So, check out the support team, alabamafootballpodcast.com. There's a page that speaks to that. Sign up. And again, you know, sort of teasing on the Zoom calls. Zoom calls are just a hell of a lot of fun just anyways. But we're gonna sort of demonstrate some stuff coming up this Thursday. And then, give us a good review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate that as well. With that, this is a wrap. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course, Roll Tide.
Save big on brunch for Mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.